Good morning, everybody, and welcome to episode 25 of the Bitcoin Veteran Spaces. I am your host, Coleman, and it looks like we have a bunch of people that are going to be joining us today on the panel. I see Jordan on the Operation Libertas handle. Good morning, sir. Shane Hazel, the fist up. Good morning. Bob Van Kirk, I see you out there. Good morning. Terrence, Wade, AC. Good morning. Wade, I got to tell you that the post you put in the group got me really, really fired up for this Bitcoin conference in Juneau. If you're able to come up and talk more about it in some more details, I'd love to get firsthand from you directly. But everyone, clear your calendars for that first week of July. It sounds like it is going to be an amazing time. So make sure. Anything fun happen to anybody over the weekend? Everybody had a pretty quiet weekend, I guess. Nobody did any white pilling, orange pilling. Well, it sounds like you guys are still refilling your coffee and still kind of getting into the groove of things. So while you're waking up and getting the gunk out of your eyes, I'm just going to go over why we do this show every single day. And it's to make sure that we're fighting for and defending the values that our founding fathers gave us. Our rights to liberty and free speech, freedom of religion, due process. These are things that will not be infringed upon. And we need to go out and reconnect with our local communities, with our neighbors, and show them about the power of Bitcoin, what it can do for your self-privacy, for your controlling your own assets. We need to get out there and make sure that those connections are getting lit. We do not support tyranny in any form whatsoever. And together, we are going to get this country back to the way that our founding fathers had envisioned. We are all Bitcoiners. We are all veterans. And most importantly, we are all for freedom. And if you're a veteran listening to us for the first time, or you just haven't reached out yet, please send us a DM. We'll put you in contact with one of our extended community members. There's more than 600 of us, and we are just constantly growing. So please, please reach out. Hey, Wade, I see you up here. Good morning, sir. Do you want to talk about the Bitcoin conference in Juneau?
Sure. We had a meeting this weekend. It went really well. There's some challenges to coming to Juneau and lodging, and there's only so many facilities. There's only so many rental cars, so those are a bit of a challenge. But at the same time, we've decided to lean into this, and we believe that there's plenty to offer. It's just a matter of being a little creative. People will have to book in Airbnbs instead of fancy hotels. But we've got plenty of those. The conference, even though it kicks off on the weekend, there's just so much going on the week before from the BB run. Hopefully, we can get Gabe Lord or somebody working on that. Looking at doing a range day. The Tracy Arm Fjord cruise is spectacular. It's for everybody who lives up here, that we all know that it's the creme de la creme of cruises in Southeast Alaska. You can go to Glacier Bay from Juneau, but we all go to Tracy Arm. It's an 8-hour cruise, and to have 120, 150 people in the boat, all talking Bitcoin for 8 hours while you're watching the water pour off the mountainsides. When I did it when I was little, the boat actually pulled underneath the waterfall and gave everybody cups. And you just got wet and held out your cup and you had something to drink. It goes up to the glacier, though, and you've got the seal pups laying on the icebergs. It's just really cool. The other thing we might do is maybe a whale pass for going out and seeing the whales. But the 4th of July starts with the 3rd, fireworks on the 3rd. The next day is the parade. Would really like to run something in the parade this year. Yeah, and then, of course, the conference, a couple days of conference. And there's so many other activities you could do. Getting up here, if you have a little more time for a vacation. But with regard to impact, Juneau's the ultimate place to impact with Bitcoin. It's a destination, which is really cool. But even more so, we've got 30,000 people that live in Juneau, so it's a small town. you know, comparatively to other places. Yet it's the capital. This is where state policy is made. So if you go to a town like Nashville, the one thing I noticed about Nashville and Santa Monica is everything just gets lost. You know, we go there. Some people pick up Bitcoin, you know, understand it a little better, and we all go home. But how much impact do you have on the town or the state? And it seemed like, you know, we had some impact in Nashville, but in Juneau, 30,000 people, everybody has some kind of a grip on policy statewide. We've got Permanent Fund Corporation. We've got Department of Revenue. We've got Department of Admin. We've got the Governor's Office. We've got Legislative Affairs Agency. We've got, you know, the Labor, Trades, and Crafts Union, the GGU, SU, KK, Correctional Officers, Troopers, all of these unions. We've got the Plumbers and Pipe Fitters, the Electrical Unions, IBEW, we have Sea Alaska Native Corporation, Gold Belt. We have Alaska Native Brotherhood. There's the amount of impact that you can have in a town like Juneau to affect statewide policy is massive. So to get a conference in Juneau and to get a bunch of people here talking about Bitcoin, to hit the streets on the busiest day, the busiest weekend of the year, when everybody comes to Juneau, anyway, people don't leave Juneau for the 4th. They come here. They go downtown with their families. They mingle. There's a huge parade that goes through downtown Juneau, then Douglas Island. And you end it over by the fire station on Douglas Island with hot dogs. The firefighters do a tug of war and blast each other with the fire hoses. So there's all these events that go on. And to have 100, 200, 500, 1,000 Bitcoiners wandering the streets and taking part in the activities would just be phenomenal. The impact that would outflow from Juneau statewide, I don't think it's measurable. So that's what I'm excited about. It's bringing in, it wouldn't even need 1,000 people. Just to have a couple, few hundred people here could really change the course, the direction of the state. So that's it. That's my rant.
Well, that's awesome, Wade. I love hearing that. And again, I'm so excited for this conference. And just want to stress, it is family friendly. So make sure you bring your wife, your kids, and go out there, enjoy it. Like Wade said, get in a little early, stay a little late. There's a ton of things to do. And if you've never been to Alaska in the summer, you're missing out. Do not miss this opportunity, especially if you're going to be hanging out with Bitcoiners. What else? How much better can your summer vacation get?
Is it safe to assume that, given the lack of lodging, that there's not a whole lot of conferences that are ever held in Juneau?
There are conferences that are held up here. We have the big things are Gold Medal, which is a basketball tournament that's all of Southeast Alaska comes up here for, and we have a big folk fest. And there's regular conferences, but I guess the big fear is the amount of people that a Bitcoin conference can bring. You're definitely going to want to book early. If 5,000 people want to come to Juneau, that's going to be a challenge if you're the last one tried to book.
Well, so, I mean, that seems like there's a huge opportunity to have an outsized impact. And the fact that it's the state capital, I just feel like there's so much more bang for the buck at Juneau, what we could accomplish. And having, like you said, even if it's 200, 500, but if it could be, you know, 1,000 people walking around in Bitcoin shirts during one of the busiest times of in Juneau, and everybody kind of seeing like, hey, what's going on with this? What are these people all about? Why are there so many of them here? Why are they being so helpful in our community and cleaning up and adding to our economy and all this stuff? I'm super excited about it. And I think it's something that probably needs to be replicated in some other states where it's like these smaller towns where you can have a bigger impact. I think it's awesome. As far as the lodging thing, I think I need some information on like campgrounds and stuff, because I'm thinking we get some dudes that are like willing to just go rough it. We just get some dudes that go camping and we do some other like extracurricular activities while we're out near the woods, hiking, doing survival stuff. There's just opportunities that way for guys that want to go and do some.
You bring in your blue sleeping bag for the bears, Jordan?
Jordan?
They may have already gotten to him.
Yeah.
Be careful going camping with Jordan. He likes the blue sleeping bag. Obviously, blueberries are some of the favorite snacks of the bears out there. But just wanted to say good morning real quick. And I think this Alaska thing is going to be pretty outstanding. And if, you know, Wade's got anything to do with it, everything Wade touches is just top notch. So, you know, hats off to Wade for doing all this. I did want to say, you know, good morning and let you guys know tomorrow we have Scott Willie on the show from Paladin Tactical. And I think I'm saying that Paladin Tower Tactical. I blame Coleman for saying it wrong all the time.
I was told to say it 50 times as Paladin Tower Tactics.
Paladin, not dying. Paladin, not Paladin. But yeah, it's Scott Willie. He's coming on the show tomorrow night. He is he's one of the fastest shots I've ever seen. He's a great instructor. We had him out with us in Nashville, and I got to tell you, you know, having that guy on the range with us, I think just brought another level of credibility. He runs a fantastic service out there, and I think we're going to get into a lot of his background within the military, and then obviously as a law enforcement officer, and now training those people out there that need to bone up on their own security a little bit. But I'm pretty excited to have him on tomorrow night.
Absolutely. In case no one heard that, 7 o'clock Eastern time tomorrow night. And just in case no one's ever been in bear country before, the first rule of bear country is always bring someone who runs slower than you. You'll never have an issue with that. Good morning, lowercase Terrence. And uppercase, it looks like he just jumped off. Good morning, AC, as well.
Hey, how's it going, guys? Nice hearing about this Alaska thing, Wade. By the way, Wade, a large part of my diet is fish, like especially salmon. So if I head up to Alaska, because I've never been, do I need to ship a bunch of salmon ahead of time for me for my diet, or do you guys have any fish there?
Plenty of fish here. Plenty. So looking at, I'm... For the Bitcoin veterans, for the people who are in the mansion for Nashville, they should speak about my better half, Tammy. She did a big halibut feast for everybody at the mansion in Nashville. We actually spent 36 hours in Salt Lake City sweating whether or not the halibut would make it to Nashville, thanks to Delta Airlines. But it made it. It was a pretty spectacular meal. Jordan can leave out the part where I was fumbling around and couldn't find the freezer, but yeah.
Yeah, it was some of the best halibut I've had, so it was amazing.
Speaking of festivals, Wade, weren't you the one that won like that whole VIP package to Pacific Bitcoin this year that was going to be taking place October 18? I think that was you, right?
That was. Yep.
So what happens? Are you still coming out for the LA Bitcoin Week that a bunch of Bitcoiners are sort of just scrapping together with various events during that same time?
Well, when that got canceled and didn't hear back from anyone for a long time, so I went ahead and, you know, I only get so much vacation time a year, so I canceled my vacation. And when I reached out and said, what's going on with this? The response was, oh, you're coming down for this. I'm like, that's not what I was planning. So can we put this off till next year? And Corey responded back with, yeah, if they do something for Pacific next year, I'll be coming down for that. I just have way too much going on this year.
Bob, I'm not sure how long we have you up on the panel, so I want to ask you a really quick question, as you're my go-to banking guy. On Friday evening, looks like the SEC just granted the accelerated approval. Oops, sorry. The SEC exempted BNY Mellon an exemption for the Saab 121. I'd like to get your intake, or your view, sorry, on how quickly this gets settled and how quickly they're able to start holding and trading Bitcoin in the bank.
Yeah, I think it's a big deal for sure that commercial banks and investment banks will be able to hold or custody Bitcoin for the clients. But I do think that it's, you know, step one of many. I think a lot of people are excited about this, but it's probably going to take some time. BNY is very well respected, and they have a big business, a big custody business, not just Bitcoin, you know, obviously other investment products. So it's natural that they would be fighting for this, and it's cool to see that they're exempt. We'll just have to see what happens with, you know, the particulars. And there's a lot of other check boxes they need to check off. I'm sure they're going to be able to do it. So it's positive. But this was a big one for sure.
So if we were looking for a time frame, are you thinking 60, 90 days or 90, 120?
Man, it's really hard to say. It seems though that, you know, it's not like this just came out of the blue for them. They've been working on this for quite some time. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's by the end of the year, but, you know, it's anyone's guess, to be honest.
Hey, Bob, with this news and with BNY Mellon, or even if other banks start to come online, would you think that this would help some of the big Bitcoin ETFs move around their custody, or at least spread it out a little bit, not just all be stuck at Coinbase? I would think that that would be where this would go.
Yeah, it's certainly possible. And just like with anything, you know, Coinbase is the easy choice because they're the, you know, publicly traded company. They're well regulated. They're pretty well respected for this being a new asset compared to, you know, the TradFi folks, but or what the TradFi folks think of it. But I think that certainly there's risk with anything, and also, like, you got to consider what BNY Mellon provides to the rest of the marketplace already, and so it'd make natural sense that as we see consolidation of the ETFs eventually, you know, it's presumed that there will only be maybe a handful going forward because some of them are just too small for it to make sense out of the 11 that exist, that some of this stuff will get moved around, and BNY Mellon is in a good position to do that if they can, you know, get across the finish line on this project.
It's very interesting. I like seeing that the ball is moving again. It's like a big ship trying to make a turn, but you can start seeing all the institutions and everybody starting to get involved. And so it's a good sign, I believe, that they're exempt from Saab 121. I think the other thing I'd like to hit on, and Bob, if you can speak on this as well, the SEC just granted the approval for IBIT to have options trading. And so I know absolutely nothing about this. So I'd like to hear everyone's thoughts on how this takes effect, when it takes effect, and kind of the implications that it would have on the price of Bitcoin.
Yeah, others can feel free to chime in. I don't want to dominate the stage, but it's definitely a big deal. It makes it so that it's much easier for folks to hedge, and to also just, you know, the options market's a big market. So I think we'll see, you know, some people will be forced buyers of Bitcoin because of options, and because we have limited supply, that's definitely going to be a big deal. So as you kind of look at how options work, I'm not going to get into it and bore people, but essentially, it just really, I mean, the big news here is that it's going to drive adoption of this asset. It's a maturing asset. And a lot of people will FUD these types of things and say they don't like, you know, that BlackRock's trying to suppress the price and things like that. But really, when it comes down to it, this is becoming financialized just like everything else. And due to its finite supply, that's a good thing for Bitcoin adoption.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but this takes place on the 1st of January?
To be honest, I've not seen an official date, but that's certainly possible.
Okay, maybe that's just the rumor going around. It said it'll start early 25. Does anyone else have any comments they'd like to make on the options trading? Cool.
I have a comment. My friend is a professional options trader for stocks, and he likes Bitcoin. So I've been asking him for, you know, periodically why he doesn't trade Bitcoin options, and he said it just wasn't liquid enough. But this should add liquidity to at least the BlackRock Bitcoin ETF, and he can trade that, and I think other people will trade that. So a lot of times traders, they won't trade something that's not widely traded, meaning the volume is too low, so the bid-ask spread that you pay is too high and it's hard to make money and there's not a lot of depth, so they can't trade in size, so they'll avoid those markets. Hopefully this will help fix that.
AC, did you have something you wanted to say, sir?
Yeah, I found it interesting over the weekend just to kind of see the split in the community. You know, there are some folks, and I won't call anyone out by name, but there are some folks who are saying that, you know, this is going to dampen volatility and we're not going to see the prices rise that we've seen in the past. Then we've got, you know, other personalities saying, you know, this is going to be fuel for the gamma candle that we've all been waiting for. So I find it interesting from my own perspective. I think the big delta here is you've got the underlying asset that trades 24/7, 365. And then you've got, you know, the stock or the option associated with it that trades 6.5 hours per day, 5 days a week, roughly 252 trading days per year. So I think there's the potential there that, you know, there will be wild swings and people, like Bob said, are going to be forced buyers or forced sellers of Bitcoin because there's going to be a run up over the weekend and they've got to wait until Monday. And they're not going to have time to execute, and it's going to smash them in the face a couple times until they learn their lesson. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out in real life, but that's kind of where my mind is at right now.
I want to give a quick shout out to Mike Hobart. Good morning, Mike. Good to see you up and listening. Randy K, Death in Bitcoin, BTC Hard Charger. Good morning, everybody. And if y'all don't follow us on the handle, make sure you check out the daily intelligence bulletin that Randy K puts out every day. It's really, really important to go over it. It hits on all the main events that have happened in the last 24 hours. So it's a really good read. So make sure you're following us, follow Randy K, and make sure you're reading that report. It's definitely something I'd like to mention that I saw released this morning. The Department of Justice released a letter that Ryan Roth had supposedly written after he was taken into custody. And in the letter, he apologizes for not completing his mission, assassinating Trump, and he actually offers a bounty of $150,000 to whoever can complete the job. And so when I first saw this circulating, I really thought it was just a fabricated story, but it turns out that it is legitimate. And so my question is, why on earth is the Department of Justice releasing this? This is just insane. You just put a literal bounty on a presidential candidate's head. It's just, if you needed any clear evidence that there was collusion or that they really don't want Trump to be in office, I think this is your proof. And if anyone has any thoughts on this or anything they'd like to mention or comment on, please go ahead and start speaking. But this definitely put me in a different mood this morning when I read that. Shane, nothing?
I was going to let somebody else chime in. You know, there's a reason for, you know, everything that's going on. Obviously, we're in this fifth generation PSYOP war. Yeah. Who's to say, you know, what these guys are doing? I think Mike's got, you know, probably a better take. He's got his hand up too. I at this point, you know, determining what's real, what's not real, you know, bounties on presidents' heads and things like that, you know, it's not outside of the realm of possibility to publish it and put it out there and kind of start creating, you know, these things. I've thought for a while, you know, because of this honeypot and the way, you know, you're getting social credit scores, you know, here on X, is this would actually be a terribly fantastic way to start this whole thing, to kick off the revolution. If you got, you know, people who are out there with terrible social credit scores and they need to be out of the population, and you start offering these contracts to, you know, people who are here in the United States, or whether they've come in from, you know, other countries that are looking for a place and looking for a payout, this just seems like the, you know, dystopian nightmare that's waiting to happen to me. But in terms of, you know, Trump specifically, yeah, I, you know, what are you going to do besides try to keep that guy as safe as possible, you know, until the election? And the idea that you're going to continue to go out there and do more and more and more crowd stops, you know, after the attempted assassination attempts right now, like it's not fear. It's just being smart. If they would take that campaign and start to be a little more diligent in terms of risk versus reward, because I don't think you're changing a lot of minds at this point.
No, but it's a good way to limit his presence. Like you just kind of hit on, if he can't be out in public speaking, it's a good way to limit his exposure. So that could be one angle on this. Mike, welcome up, sir. I know you probably have something you'd like to hit on with this.
Morning, fellas. I my take isn't like long-winded or anything. I think this is just clear evidence that particularly the FBI has been co-opted and politically weaponized into a type of I want to say SS is like the natural kind of thing, but like I don't want to implicate that the FBI is necessarily of that level of skill by any means, but I think that it's clearly obvious that multiple aspects of the Department of Justice, between the FBI, the Secret Service, because I think that, what was it, last week or a couple weeks ago, there's implications that this second shooter on the golf course was evidence that there was a mole within the Secret Service. I saw one Navy SEAL say that on national television. I've been saying it for the last, like, I think the last couple of months since the first shooting. I think the FBI has been complicit in all of it. I think that's it, man. Like, I don't know what else to say, because like, I think it's been clear evidence ever since the Steele dossier came out, that the DOJ has been weaponized politically against the enemies of the liberal left. And this is just like, and you guys know me, I'm not a Trumper. I'm not some MAGA guy. Like I'm just looking for the best candidate to lead the country. But like, this is particularly disturbing in my opinion. It's not good evidence for like future presidential races after this one either. So like, once we get past this one, and we, you know, make it through the chaos that's going to follow, when regardless of which side wins, I don't think that the opposition is going to accept the results, and we're going to have to deal with the chaos that follows that. The next presidential race is going to be particularly chaotic. I think personally, if the liberal left gets their candidate into the presidency, I don't know. I think this is just more evidence of more chaos to come in the future.
Yes. And I think everyone should, we're not trying to put fear on anybody, just make sure you have a plan for what's going on in the next couple of months. Just again, this is just really alarming, that they would put this out. I can't see any reason for justification of releasing this document, if it's true. And so it's just,
it's a little Coleman, it's particularly clever in my opinion. Like they're like, kind of like what Shane was saying, they're effectively trying to turn anybody in the general public into a patsy by leaking or putting out this fake or real document. Like what Shane was saying with his example, like somebody that's really particularly struggling economically, and they see this, and then they get motivated out of desperation and anger and fear to go out and do something like this to carry out the mission, looking for that payout with the off chance that it is fake or it is real. Like, that's what scares me. I don't know about you guys.
Mike, to your point, you know, and I hate to even reference this, like the whole John Wick series, right? Is like, you know, if you've got a bunch of people who are struggling in this country right now, you know, whether they're Americans or not Americans, and they are motivated by money, which a lot of people are, there's who's to say that, you know, something like this can't happen? There's all sorts of networks out there. If the FBI and the DOJ, let's just say, like, most of the cabinet, right? Like, we know for a fact that most of the cabinet are dual citizens, and they don't want to have to replace that entire cabinet. Merrick Garland, the DOJ, the head of the DOJ, who has the FBI, and then you've got the intelligence service, and I can't remember her name, but she's also part of it. These guys know all of this stuff, and they're networked all over the world. They know exactly what's going on, and the fact that, you know, there's a quote-unquote threat or there's networks that could be doing this, it just seems like it's very, very intentional in terms of this is terrorism. Like, this is absolutely terrorism. It's not going on just here in America. It's going on in the Middle East. It's going on in Eastern Europe right now. The amount of hands in the cookie jar, so to speak, right now from all of these people stirring the pot and pushing us towards kinetic violent action is absolutely outrageous and disgusting.
Shane, do you believe that there's anybody in the current administration or currently in some kind of role to issue any statement on this, countering this, inquiring why the DOJ would release this? Do you think there'll be any pushback from this, or do you think they're just going to let it just kind of roll over?
Well, I think, you know, if I've got a microphone and I've got access to these guys, I'm asking Avril Haines, who's the director of national intelligence, and David Cohen, who's the deputy director of the CIA, what's going on. I'm asking Alejandro Mayorkas, you know, the head of DHS. I'm asking him, and I'm asking Merrick Garland, you know, what the hell is going on here where you guys are, you know, leaking this kind of stuff, but don't really have any specifics on it. Like, what are we actually looking at? Why is it a mystery? Why do we have this threat, this, you know, this targeting of a president, and we don't have any answers for any of this shit yet? I mean, none of it. It's absolutely intentional. And that's, if anybody in the media who's also owned by the same people, right? If they were really, you know, on our side, which they're not, they would be asking these questions and they would be outraged by such things.
Jordan, did you have a question, sir, or did you want to comment on this?
No, I'm not even 100% what we're talking about. I jumped in late and I was hoping somebody was going to pin something in the nest so I could get up to speed.
I'll pin something right now. We're just talking about the DOJ release of Ryan Roth's letter where he's calling for a bounty on Trump's head because he couldn't finish the job.
Oh, that's, yeah, the fact that that would even be released when it's like, well, we can't even give a name of the suspect that we think might have done something because, you know, that could ruin somebody's life or jeopardize our investigation, but then they're going to release that. That's ridiculous. Like, it's obviously designed to instigate what we are all already believe, which is that they want Trump dead because they know he's going to crush it in a landslide.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then how does that just destroy the last 8 years of their narrative against him when everyone's just like, fuck you, we're going with this guy anyway, we don't care about, like, that's like the nail in the coffin for their whole system.
The double standard on this, though, is just that they said that Trump enticed violence by his tweet about January 6th. I'm quite positive this is definitely enticing more violence than what Trump did on January 6th. They're actually, the DOJ should be held responsible for releasing this, that they are calling for someone to kill Trump.
No, besides calling for violence, like, they're calling for direct murder.
Yeah, and they're offering a bounty. You could hold the DOJ directly responsible for this if they were able to do the same with Trump for that tweet.
And once the DOJ releases this, then all the news outlets have they can cover their ass because, well, they're just reporting on something that the DOJ report on. Even if they say, like, oh, what a terrible thing this is, which they're probably not going to spin it the way we are. And so then it's just going to get amplified even more.
Yeah, I think you have to look at this is what it is. We're up against a communist coup. I mean, if you're really looking at this objectively, what is the objective right now? It's chaos. It's chaos here. It's chaos in Europe. It's chaos in the Middle East. And the final piece that hasn't fallen right now is the American piece. The American peace hasn't fallen because of the amount of people who are absolutely armed to the teeth and staying peaceful here in the United States. Now, if you take, you know, the conclusion of what they want to happen, where President Trump is deceased and no longer with us, or murdered in this case, right? This is the quickest way to send this country into a tailspin of violence. And I think that's exactly what they want. They need the violence so that it takes away and it distracts from everything else that we're already seeing, the sentiment of Israel genociding Palestine, now going into Lebanon, which we should probably talk about a little bit, the fact that they own the media, the fact that they have the cabinet, the fact that they have Hollywood, and Hollywood's obviously burning down over the weekend with the whole P. Diddy, but nobody's going, well, who was his financier, right? And, you know, if you start looking up instead of down at, like, everybody who's, you know, obviously a terrible person, but also up as, like, who's making all this happen? You know, this is where we're at in America right now. And the last thing we need is violence. I understand that at some point, you know, it's defense, but right now we're not there. We're still sitting in a pretty good place. The guys with the guns are being as peaceful as absolutely possible, but you take away that hope of winning this election, and, you know, the guy that, you know, went through the process of actually being nominated by his platform, and you kill him, you murder him, you take him out, then, you know, you've got exactly what they want. And that's probably a lot of violence.
Well, I'm glad you started that with saying that they want crisis, because the four stages that, what was his name? Yuri Bezmenov said to destabilize a nation without, you know, even firing a shot, is first demoralization, second destabilization, third is crisis, and then fourth is normalization. And I think we're kind of in between the crisis and normalization, where actually one of the guys after one of the F3 workouts made this point. He was like, think about, like, the first assassination attempt to Trump. Like, what was your reaction? Everyone was just like, holy crap, can't believe this happened. Everybody wanted to talk about it. And then when the second one happened, what was your reaction? It was almost like, yeah, of course, because they failed the first time. And so we're in this in-between period of crisis and normalization, not just about this, but, like, just chaos in general is just being more and more normalized.
Shane, you kind of hit on a good point too about, like, who's funding all of this stuff. Like, as you look up, right? Like, this guy supposedly was begging from his family for, like, $5 in 2022, and then all of a sudden he has $150,000 to pay someone to enable this. Like, and then the stuff with Diddy, and then it just seems like, you know, they had stuff on Trump, and Trump said, "I don't care, sue me." And they have, right? Like, they've carried out all of the stuff. So it's like they seem to have something on everyone that has any hope of, you know, any power. And yeah, it's crazy as you start looking at it.
Yeah, I want to make a disclaimer here too, to make sure that everybody understands where I'm at. I don't speak for all the guys in Bitcoin Veterans by any means. I am only addressing very specific people who are related to the Jewish faith. Like, I'm not saying it's just Jews who are bad. Like, that's not my thing. I am saying specifically the people who we are calling out in these extremely high positions, whether they are in government or in media or in Hollywood or banking or whatever. This is super, super specific. And I wouldn't dream of lumping everybody together. I've been called, I can't tell you guys, the flack that I get in the, this conflation where, and a lot of times on purpose, right? Is because if you conflate it and you can call somebody a racist or an anti-Semite, then obviously you're taking the win. The problem is they've used this over and over and over, and the victim card has been played to the point where it doesn't exist any longer. We've got to be very concise. We have to continue to call for peace. We have to be extremely, we have to put ourselves out there and say, hey, look, this is not everybody. This is a select group of really, really diabolical people. And there are obviously some conspiracy happening around the world in real time. It's not conspiracy, fiction anymore. Like, just wait a couple days and then you'll see something come out on what it was. And then, like you said, Jordan, that's when they try to normalize the chaos of what's happened. And I don't think people are biting off on it. And I see more and more of this tailwind coming behind Americans right now that are figuring the thing out very fast. And, the best thing to do is just let it be exposed. Truth is the absolute fire for people who are lying, manipulating, murdering, stealing, coercing the rest of us. That is the truth is what is going to set us free. And if you continue to stay peaceful, as long as possible, they are going to burn their own house to the ground. They're actually doing it right now.
I wanted to add one thing, because I'm guessing we'll probably want to put a bow on this topic and move on to the next. I just wanted to add a little bit of support to what Shane just said, like around individuals of a particular faith. I just want you guys, I'm going to bring it up whenever it's relevant, just to keep it in the zeitgeist and the state of mind, that like, this isn't necessarily just like speculationary, like, conspiracy theory that like Shane's spitting out. For those that don't know, like, you guys can go out and Google specifically Operation Underworld. It's on Wikipedia. It's from the military, the government, and the intelligence community officially partnering with the mafia. And so keep in mind, the mafia is the Italian mafia, and then there's the Jewish mob, and they partnered with both of them. And we're going to have individuals and assets of both of those groups within both the military and the government. And that's why we're seeing all this nonsense play out.
If you haven't heard of or read Whitney Webb's books, One Nation Under Blackmail, you got to check them out, because she lays out all of this, how it's been done since starting from like between World War II or World War I and World War II.
I want to give a quick shout out to Lisa Huff in the audience and Greg Foss. If you all are available, please join us on stage here. But I definitely want to hit on, like, we covered a lot of this, and there's always that saying, Bitcoin fixes this. And let's dive into, how does Bitcoin fix the issues that we have right now with the corruption going on with the DOJ, what's going on with Israel and Lebanon? Like, specifically, like, when we say this, how can we tell this to the non-Bitcoin crowd? How does Bitcoin fix this?
Well, it's all specifically perpetuated and enabled by the printing of money whenever they want to fund any sort of defense project or bill that's going to support either increasing the budget for the intel community or the military or both. Like, it's blatantly that simple. And like, you don't really have to get too complex. Now, like, when you look into like how the funding is getting hidden in bills, especially those ridiculous omnibus bills that are like 4,000 pages long that get released like 24 hours before they're supposed to vote on it. Like all these different systems are enabled by the fiat system. I don't understand how anybody could be seeing what's been going on for the last 4 years in particular and not understand that the Federal Reserve is directly complicit in all of these aspects, especially the bankers.
Yeah, I think Bitcoin is actually forcing this. And it's unfortunately, it's a period we have to go through. We have to go through this period. We have to get through it. We've got to, and it's going to help us grow in the long run. But in the meantime, this is kind of the nasty part of what Bitcoin's, going to do. And, I remember, I think it was Jordan Peterson, who was up on stage in 2022 or something down in Miami, said, you guys have a lot of power with Bitcoin, and what's coming from Bitcoin is going to create a vacuum. And so be careful of what you're doing with it. I think that's where we're at now. And what we need to really understand is as we move through this and why this is happening is because Bitcoin is soaking up liquidity. And I'm sure Greg can probably talk to this at a much deeper level than I can. But if Bitcoin is soaking up liquidity and it's soaking up the liquidity of those people who benefit from a fiat system, then what do they have to do? I mean, you start to look around the world and how it's been run for a long time. The U.S. has just been run on a petrodollar forever. Now that Saudi Arabia is no longer, you know, our little oil pot over there, and they're like, hey, you know, we can take other currencies besides the U.S. dollar, and probably will, and are, you know, obviously moving towards being part of BRICS. This is the force of Bitcoin, right? Is you're starting to force places like Israel and the United States and people who have been addicted to this fiat currency to start looking elsewhere. And, you know, obviously America's got it pretty good here. We've got a lot of natural resources. I think, you know, no matter what happens, you know, we've got the natural resources to do a lot of really good things after this whole thing comes apart. But Israel, on the other hand, is looking at, you know, the Greater Israel Project. And when you start to see, you know, what the outlines of that territory are, whether it's part of Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, a bunch of Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, once you start to understand that they are starting to try to expand their territory to encompass a lot of oil fields, you start to really go, yeah, you know why? Because they're not going to be able to sit there and print money anymore. That you know, just going to be accepted by the rest of the world. Like this game is over. It's collapsing in real time, and now they're making plays to make sure up their position in the world.
And with this money, go ahead, Jordan. Sorry.
Well, a lot of times, you know, we talk about like how Bitcoin fixes this, and we have these big like overarching ideas and concepts, which I think are accurate. Like, I don't want to take anything away from that, but like as an anecdotal point, this is how it's changed it for me. So we've been doing this Bitcoin Veterans thing for over a year, and those who have been watching for a while have probably seen like I've taken a bit of a step back, but it's because we keep talking about like building local community and what men need to do to help fix these things, because we're entering this, you know, hard times create strong men. But if we're not out there like doing it, then like what's the point? So how Bitcoin fixes this for me is it has realigned, you know, my incentives and my thinking about where we are at, like for me personally as well as societally. And I've been tapping into F3 to build out local community resiliency and bring those ideas and concepts back to Bitcoin veterans or back to all you people listening. So you're out there, hopefully I'm motivating some people to go out there and realize you're going to have to go do some hard stuff to prepare for the future, because I think what Bitcoin Veterans has the potential of doing is filling that power vacuum by being a seed that just germinates throughout all of you people who listen to us and watch us and follow us and start getting these ideas back into society of go into your community and go fix things. Otherwise, somebody else will, and they're probably not going to be doing it for the right reason. So for me, that's how Bitcoin fixes this on a personal level.
And I like that analogy. Think of it, Bitcoin is the seed, and you're the farmer. Farmers have to go out there and till the soil. You have to plant the seeds. You have to care for it. You have to water it. You can't just do that from your couch. You've got to get out there, get into the fields, go out to your local communities. And again, you don't have to make giant splash or like a huge impact. It's just the subtle things. It's just be that guy or that group that just constantly bringing it up. Hey, have you heard about this? Have you checked into this? And just those little seeds, they go a long ways. And remember, the first time you heard about Bitcoin, the vast majority of us just pushed it to the side. And we were like, that's just a nothing burger. And then we all wish we could go back in time and just slap ourselves in the face because we were so dumb we didn't listen. So remember, put yourself in those shoes of the people you're speaking with. Very few will get it on that first time, but hit them at a level where they can understand price is increasing, your savings are going away, how are you going to retire? Things of these natures. So it's just really important to get back to that level and do the hard work. Anyone else have any comments on that?
I'm just real. I mean, this community, it amazes me all the time. It's filled with some of the smartest people, and the ability to look at this from a micro up to a macro level to see how Bitcoin does shape and shift and change, and the call to action that this group specifically has for going out there and making this happen at all those different levels. Absolutely incredible.
One thing that I will add that I just thought of is what you guys are talking about. I believe you guys are talking about the options being allowed to trade on the BlackRock Bitcoin ETF product. That's another thing that I would recommend that individuals in this conversation and going, especially those that are going to be listening in the future, keep in mind. And probably I would recommend even like being ready to have the conversation with individuals that you're talking about, like planting the seeds of Bitcoin in their minds. Those options are going to be used as a strategy to pull Bitcoin away from people that don't understand the asset. And they're going to be used to accumulate that Bitcoin in the hands of individuals that are relying on and empowering this fiat system that we're talking about. So just keep that in mind. This is all like, these are all kind of like tactics of war to kind of like steal and reorganize where resources are distributed to be able to keep the system on life support and keep it all going.
Yeah, don't gamble with your Bitcoin if you don't know what you're doing.
No, that seems simple advice, Bob, but it's so easy to try and leverage it, right? Especially if you're just new to the industry, you see all these cryptos offering yield, blah, blah, blah. Well, let me try this with Bitcoin. You're going to get wrecked. Always make sure. That's the biggest thing I stress, is put money into it that you will never be tempted to touch for at least 4 years. Even if that's only $100, like everybody's entry level is different, but always tell them just start off slow and then give them a direction where to go. My go-to is the Bitcoin Standard. I always have a couple extra in my office and I'm constantly handing those out to get people to read. And just know that as soon as you start reading and they're investing and they start putting their savings, you're not investing in Bitcoin, you're saving in Bitcoin. As their confidence starts to grow in it, that allocation is going to become more and more. And then finally they start to get that aha moment and they wake up. But while I still have everybody's attention, I want to give a quick shout out to our partners, Punchplate. Check them out at punchplate.com. Make sure you're stamping your seed phrase on a metal plate. Paladin Tower Tactics, professional firearms tactical training, paladintowertactics.com. Solo Satoshi, open source of Bitcoin mining at solosatoshi.com. And Black Sheep Ammo, restock your supplies, blacksheepammo.com. Shane, did you want to go ahead and touch on what's going on with Israel right now and Jordan?
Yeah, this is actually over in Lebanon. Lebanon got struck. We're seeing in reports from Israel specifically, that are being carried by the Israeli-owned press out there, that now there are cruise missiles that are being located in civilian houses. And this just struck me as absolutely absurd. If anybody has ever actually seen a cruise missile, they're not real small. And if you are accustomed to Middle Eastern housing, it's not real big, to say the least. To see some of the graphics that these guys are putting forth and then have the media just, swallow it down and spit it back out for them it would be laughable if it wasn't murdering people. This latest graphic they showed, it's going around right now, is a cruise missile on the second story of a house in a compound out there in Lebanon. And this has just gotten to the point where I see this and I go, man, this is the same kind of shit that got us into war in 2001. It is, these are terrorists. These people are hiding, weapons and munitions among civilians, and we have to take them out. We're going to put out the call, or we're at least going to take over their airwaves, drop leaflets, and whatever, everything that we do. It's such a tired MO, but they do it anyway. They sit there and say, hey, we gave the civilians warning. We told them to evacuate, and now we're starting to, blow up these, places with munitions and cruise missiles of all things inside of them. I don't even understand how you would launch a cruise missile from a domestic dwelling, first and foremost. It's absolutely insane.
Do you think this is going to end soon, or do you see this continuing on for weeks and months?
I think this is just escalation. You know, it's funny is, you know, all the quote unquote terrorist organizations that they continue to point their fingers at, whether it's Iran, you know, places like Yemen, you know, the rest of these, you know, Turkey, everybody who's supposed to be these absolute maniacs haven't done anything. They, you know, you've got Iran who's got nuclear capabilities. You've got Yemen who, you know, obviously can reach out and strike them through, you know, through hypersonic missiles, which we've seen. And they've only done it once. And obviously Turkey's got a ton of firepower at their disposal. So to understand, you know, what they're doing, they're escalating. They continue to escalate and continue to move. And China, I think, just recently came out and said, hey, if you're in Israel, you may want to leave Israel if you're not a combatant. So, you know, between them, Iran, Turkey, Yemen, and possibly even Saudi, man, it's getting pretty dicey. I think, you know, like we said earlier, you know, we're getting towards that stage of chaos where they're poking the bear to elicit a response, and you know they need it, they have to have it right now. And the fact that they haven't done it, I think, speaks world to the restraint of the people in the region.
And keep in mind, like when with the this fiat system, like pushing for war at like every turn, it's not just the bullets and the bandages that they're working to make money off of. It's the big pharma of repairing, quote unquote, repairing those soldiers that are getting blown up and those civilians, as well as working on the infrastructure rebuild programs and development that's going to be going on after, when they've completely decimated these areas. So this is just like, I mean, it's not funny, but it's like, I find humor in the darkness and the ridiculousness of these strategies. It's just like, it's laughably pathetic. Like just the things that they're willing to do, they're willing to burn the world despite the rest of humanity in order to continue pumping their bags. Like it's just, it's disgusting.
It's uniquely evil.
That's a good way to put it, yes.
Uniquely evil.
Well, and an important thing to keep in mind is that they're only able to keep pushing the window because of the American support, blank check. So it sucks, but our government is the, you know, they're not actively perpetrating it, but it's because of their support that it's even happening and it's gone this far.
And we use that saying again, Bitcoin fixes this. In a way, it does fix this, because they can just use the money printer to fund these things. If we weren't able to just print our own money, we would have to get approval. We'd have to have some kind of bond or something that was issued to pay for this stuff. And so the sooner that we can start spreading this message across, the better everyone will be for it. We've hit the top of the hour. Does anyone have any final comments or closing remarks they would like to make before we start wrapping everything up?
Yeah, I do, Coleman. There's one thing that's been top of mind, like for this conversation this morning, that I wanted to make sure to put out. Like between the Bitcoin veterans and the veterans across America and the citizens that are gun owners, I think that the fact that Americans haven't taken to arms and haven't started just like popping off shots and getting violent here is a real testament to just like the amount of responsibility, accountability, and control by the gun owners, and especially our veterans. Because like I have been a part of conversations for the last like 2 years in particular where international individuals have been kind of like shocked and outraged that that Americans haven't taken to such strategies. And it's important to remember that we are front and center on the world stage, and we are leading by example right now, and we need to continue to do so, because if we're gonna, like, if anything is going to happen, like, we have to make sure that we are keeping in mind that the rest of the world is watching, and a lot of the world is still following the like American leadership and like the kind of standard that we put out. So like I'm personally proud of like what everybody has done so far, and I hope that continues into the future.
Yeah, absolutely, Mike. And it's important to get that message that people who own guns are not crazy or evil. Like, you go to a shooting range, you'll see the friendliest group of guys and girls out there. Everyone is smiling, having a good time. No one's arguing. So it's important to get that across as well. I think it's interesting, though, that the narrative on the left side is starting to change with gun control. I think Harris did an interview with Oprah, and she had mentioned that she owns a gun, and something that even a couple months ago, I feel like was taboo to mention. So it's interesting that they're bringing that up.
That's how bad she's losing, is that they're going to have to try to win some of the Second Amendment people over.
It's definitely not going to happen. She's not winning us over. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and end that right there, guys. I want to thank everybody who joined today's discussion. Bob, Terrence, uppercase Terrence, Mike, Shane, Jordan, AC, Lisa, I see in the audience. Thank you so much. For everybody who had us in the background and everyone just to have us on, just so you don't have to hear the voices in your head, I want to give you a big thank you. And join us again tomorrow. We do this every morning at 9 a.m. Central Time, Monday through Friday. And check out the Bitcoin Veteran video podcast tomorrow night. Tomorrow, like Shane said, we're going to have Scott Wiley or Willie Shane?
Scott Willie, Paladin Tactical.
Paladin Tower Tactics. He'll be the guest, and it'll be a good one to listen. So again, tune in. That'll be at 7 o'clock Eastern Time tomorrow. And make sure you go out there. Again, this message starts with talking to our neighbors, with our local communities, just one person at a time. Remember, you're a farmer. We're planting the Bitcoin seed. You can't do that on your couch. You can't do that on Twitter. You've got to get out there and make those connections. So go out there, see some smiling faces. I will see you all tomorrow. Everybody have a great day and go crush it.